argued vigorously against them. As our text shows, the Buddha maintained that all such claims were groundless. Purification, he contended, was the result of conduct, not of birth, and was thus accessible to those of all four castes. The Buddha even stripped the term Brahman of its hereditary accretions, and hearkening back to its original connotation of holy man, defined the true Brahman as the Arahant. See Majjhima Nikaya 98, not included in this anthology. The next two selections suggest guidelines for political administration. During the Buddha's time, two distinct forms of government prevailed among the states of northern India in which the Buddha moved and taught: monarchical kingdoms and tribal republics. As a spiritual teacher, the Buddha did not prefer one type of government to the other, nor did he actively interfere in affairs of state, but his followers included leaders from both types of state, and thus he occasionally offered them guidance intended to ensure that they would govern their realms in accordance with ethical norms. The opening scene of the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the narrative of the Buddha's last days, text 4.6.4, gives us a glimpse into this tumultuous phase of Indian history. When Magadha, the rising star among the northern monarchies, was expanding in influence and absorbing its neighboring tribal republics. In the passage reproduced here, we see King Ajatasattu, the ruler of Magadha, setting his sights on the Vajjayan Confederacy, the largest and best organized of the tribal republics. When the sutta opens, he sends his chief minister to inquire from the Buddha whether he has any chance of success in waging war against the Vajjayans. The Buddha questions Ananda about seven conditions of social stability that he had earlier taught the Vajjayans, concluding that, as long as they keep to these seven principles, as long as these principles remain in force, the Vajjayans may be expected to prosper and not decline. He then convenes a meeting of the monks and teaches them seven analogous principles of stability applicable to the monastic order. Since the eventual triumph of the monarchical type of government seemed inevitable, the Buddha sought to establish a model of kingship that could curb the arbitrary exercise of power and subordinate the king to a higher authority. He did so by setting up the ideal of the wheel-turning monarch, the righteous king who rules in compliance with the Dhamma, the impersonal law of righteousness. See text 4.1.1. The Dhamma that he obeys is the ethical basis for his rule, symbolized by the sacred wheel treasure. The Dhamma enables him to subdue without force all the nations of the world and establish a universal reign of peace and virtue based on observance of the five precepts. See text 4.6.5. The wheel-turning monarch rules for the welfare and happiness of his subjects and extends protection to all within his realm, even to the birds and beasts. Among his duties is to prevent crime from erupting in his kingdom, and to keep the kingdom safe from crime, he must give wealth to those in need, for in the view of the Nikayas, poverty is the breeding ground of criminality. This theme, mentioned among the duties of the wheel-turning monarch in text 4.6.5, is elaborated in text 4.6.6. We here see a wise chaplain advise a king that the correct way to end the plague of theft and brigandage in his realm is not by imposing harsher punishments and stricter law enforcement, but by giving the citizens the means to earn their living. Once the people enjoy a satisfactory standard of living, they will lose all interest in harming others, and the country will enjoy peace and tranquility. Chapter 4. The Happiness Visible in This Present Life. Part 1. Upholding the Dhamma in Society. Verse 1. The King of the Dhamma. The Blessed One said, "Monks, even a wheel-turning monarch, a just and righteous king, does not govern his realm without a co-regent." When he had spoken, a certain monk addressed the Blessed One thus, "But who, venerable sir, is the co-regent of the wheel-turning monarch, the just and righteous king? It is the Dhamma, the law of righteousness, O monk. replied the Blessed One. In this case, the wheel-turning monarch, the just and righteous king, relying on the Dhamma, honoring the Dhamma, esteeming and respecting it, with the Dhamma as his standard, banner, and sovereign, provides lawful protection, shelter, and safety for his own dependents. He provides lawful protection, shelter, and safety for the Khatiyas attending on him, for his army, for the Brahmins and householders, for the inhabitants of town and countryside, for ascetics and Brahmins, for the beasts and birds. A wheel-turning monarch, a just and righteous king, who thus provides lawful protection, shelter, and safety for all, is the one who rules by Dhamma only, and that rule cannot be overthrown by any hostile human being. Even so, O monk, the Tathagata, the Arahant, the perfectly enlightened one, the just and righteous king of the Dhamma, relying on the Dhamma, honoring the Dhamma, esteeming and respecting it, with the Dhamma as his standard, banner, and sovereign, provides lawful protection, shelter, and safety in regard to action by body, speech, and mind. He teaches thus. Such bodily action should be undertaken, and such should not be undertaken. Such verbal action should be undertaken, and such should not be undertaken. Such mental action should be undertaken, and such should not be undertaken. The Tathagata, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one, the just and righteous king of the Dhamma, who thus provides lawful protection, shelter, and safety in regard to action by body, speech, and mind, is the one who turns the incomparable wheel of the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma only, and that wheel of the Dhamma cannot be turned back by any ascetic or Brahmin, by any Deva or Mara or Brahma, or by anyone in the world. Anguttara Nikaya 3.14 1.109-110 Verse 2. Worshipping the Six Directions. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Raja Gaha, at the bamboo grove, in the squirrel's sanctuary. Then Sigalaka, the householder's son, having got up early and gone out of Raja Gaha, was paying homage, with wet clothes and hair, and with joined palms, to the different directions, to the east, the south, the west, the north, the nadir, and the zenith. 2. And the Blessed One, having risen early and dressed, took his robe and bowl, and went to Raja Gaha for alms. And seeing Sigalaka paying homage to the different directions, he said, Householder's son, why have you got up early to pay homage to the different directions? Venerable sir, my father, when he was dying, told me to do so. And so, out of respect for my father's words, which I revere, honor, and hold sacred, I have got up early to pay homage in this way to the six directions. But, householder's son, that is not the right way to pay homage to the six directions, according to the noble one's discipline. Well, venerable sir, how should one pay homage to the six directions, according to the noble one's discipline? It would be good if the Blessed One would teach me the proper way to pay homage to the six directions, according to the noble one's discipline. Then listen and attend carefully, householder's son. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir, Sigalaka said. The Blessed One said this. 27. And how, householder's son, does the noble disciple protect the six directions? These six things are to be regarded as the six directions. The east denotes mother and father. The south denotes teachers. The west denotes wife and children. The north denotes friends and companions. The nadir denotes servants, workers, and helpers. The zenith denotes ascetics and Brahmins. 28. There are five ways in which a son should minister to his mother and father as the eastern direction. He should think, having been supported by them, I will support them. I will perform their duties for them. I will keep up the family tradition. I will be worthy of my heritage. After my parents' deaths, I will distribute gifts on their behalf. And there are five ways in which the parents, so ministered to by their son as the eastern direction, will reciprocate. They will restrain him from evil, support him in doing good, teach him some skill, find him a suitable wife, and in due time hand over his inheritance to him. In this way, the eastern direction is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. 29. There are five ways in which pupils should minister to their teachers as the southern direction: by rising to greet them, by waiting on them, by being attentive, by serving them, by mastering the skills they teach. And there are five ways in which their teachers, thus ministered to by their pupils as the southern direction, will reciprocate. They will give through instruction, make sure they have grasped what they should have duly grasped, give them a thorough grounding in all skills, recommend them to their friends and colleagues, and provide them with security in all directions. In this way, the southern direction is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. 30. There are five ways in which a husband should minister to his wife as the western direction: by honoring her, by not disparaging her, by not being unfaithful to her, by giving authority to her, by providing her with adornments. And there are five ways in which a wife, thus ministered to by her husband as the western direction, will reciprocate: by properly organizing her work, by being kind to the servants, by not being unfaithful, by protecting stores, and by being skillful and diligent in all she has to do. In this way, the western direction is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. 31. There are five ways in which a man should minister to his friends and companions as the northern direction: by gifts, by kindly words, by looking after their welfare, by treating them like himself, and by keeping his word. And there are five ways in which friends and companions, thus ministered to by a man as the northern direction, will reciprocate: by looking after him when he is inattentive, by looking after his property when he is inattentive, by being a refuge when he is afraid, by not deserting him when he is in trouble, and by showing concern for his children. In this way, the northern direction is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. 32. There are five ways in which a master should minister to his servants and workers as the nadir: by arranging their work according to their strength, by supplying them with food and wages, by looking after them when they are ill, by sharing special delicacies with them, and by letting them off work at the right time. And there are five ways in which servants and workers, thus ministered to by their master as the nadir, will reciprocate. They will get up before him, go to bed after him, take only what they are given, do their work properly, and be bearers of his praise and good repute. In this way, the nadir is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. 33. There are five ways in which a man should minister to ascetics and Brahmins as the zenith: by kindness in bodily deed, speech, and thought, by keeping open house for them, and by supplying their bodily needs. And the ascetics and Brahmins, thus ministered to by him as the zenith, will reciprocate in five ways. They will restrain him from evil, encourage him to do good, be benevolently compassionate toward him, teach him what he has not heard, and point out to him the way to heaven. In this way, the zenith is covered, making it at peace and free from fear. From Digha Nikaya, 31. Sigalaka Sutta, 3, 180 through 181, 187 through 191. Part 2. The Family. Verse 1. Parents and Children. A. Respect for Parents. Monks, those families dwell with Brahma, where at home the parents are respected by their children. Those families dwell with the ancient teachers, where at home the parents are respected by their children. Those families dwell with the ancient deities where at home the parents are respected by the children. Those families dwell with the holy ones where at home the parents are respected by their children. Brahma, monks, is a term for father and mother. The ancient teachers is a term for father and mother. The ancient deities is a term for father and mother. The holy ones is a term for father and mother. And why? Parents are of great help to their children. They bring them up, feed them, and show them the world. Anguttara Nikaya 4:63 2:70 B. Repaying one's parents. Monks, I declare that there are two persons one can never repay. What two? One's mother and father. Even if one should carry about one's mother on one shoulder, and one's father on the other, and while doing so should live 100 years, reach the age of 100 years, and if one should attend to them by anointing them with balms, by massaging, bathing, and rubbing their limbs, and they should even avoid their excrements there. Even by that would one not do enough for one's parents, nor would one repay them. Even if one were to establish one's parents as the supreme lords and rulers over this earth so rich in the 7 treasures, one would not do enough for them, nor would one repay them. For what reason? Parents are of great help to their children. They bring them up, feed them, and show them the world. But monks, one who encourages his unbelieving parents, settles and establishes them in faith, who encourages his immoral parents, settles and establishes them in moral discipline, who encourages his stingy parents, settles and establishes them in generosity, who encourages his ignorant parents, settles and establishes them in wisdom. Such a one, monks, does enough for his parents. He repays them, and more than repays them for what they have done. Anguttara Nikaya 2 4 2 1 61 through 62 Verse 2 Husbands and Wives A. Different Kinds of Marriages. On one occasion, the Blessed One was traveling along the highway between Madhura and Viranja, and the number of householders and their wives were traveling along the same road. Then the Blessed One left the road and sat down on a seat at the foot of a tree. The householders and their wives saw the Blessed One sitting there and approached him. Having paid homage to him, they sat down to one side, and the Blessed One then said to them, Householders, there are these 4 kinds of marriages. What for? A wretch lives together with a wretch. A wretch lives together with a goddess. A god lives together with a wretch. A god lives together with a goddess. And how does a wretch live together with a wretch? Hear, householders, the husband is one who destroys life, takes what is not given, engages in sexual misconduct, speaks falsely, and indulges in wines, liquor, and intoxicants, the basis for negligence. He is immoral, of bad character. He dwells at home with a heart obsessed by the stain of stinginess. He abuses and reviles ascetics and Brahmins, and his wife is exactly the same in all respects. It is in such a way that a wretch lives together with a wretch. And how does a wretch live together with a goddess? Hear, householders, the husband is one who destroys life, who abuses and reviles ascetics and Brahmins. But his wife is one who abstains from the destruction of life, from wines, liquor, and intoxicants. She is virtuous, of good character. She dwells at home with a heart free from the stain of stinginess. She does not abuse or revile ascetics and Brahmins. It is in such a way that a wretch lives together with a goddess. And how does a god live together with a wretch? Hear, householders, the husband is one who abstains from the destruction of life, who does not abuse or revile ascetics and Brahmins. But his wife is one who destroys life, who abuses and reviles ascetics and Brahmins. It is in such a way that a god lives together with a wretch. And how does a god live together with a goddess? Hear, householders, the husband is one who abstains from the destruction of life, from wines, liquor, and intoxicants. He is virtuous, of good character. He dwells at home with a heart free from the stain of stinginess. He does not abuse or revile ascetics and Brahmins. And his wife is exactly the same in all respects. It is in such a way that a god lives together with a goddess. These, householders, are the four kinds of marriages. Anguttara Nikaya, 4:53, 2:57-59. B. How to be united in future lives. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Bhaga people, near Sumsumaragiri, in the deer park of the Besakala Grove. One morning, the Blessed One dressed, took his upper robe and bowl, and went to the dwelling of the householder Nakulapita. Having arrived there, he sat down on the seat prepared for him. Then the householder Nakulapita and the housewife Nakulamata approached the Blessed One and, after paying homage to him, sat down to one side. So seated, the householder Nakulapita said to the Blessed One, "Venerable Sir, ever since the young housewife Nakulamata was brought home to me, when I too was still young, I am not aware of having wronged her even in my thoughts, still less in my deeds. Our wish is to be in one another's sight so long as this life lasts, and in the future life as well." Then Nakulamata, the housewife, addressed the Blessed One thus, "Venerable Sir, ever since I was taken to the home of my young husband, Nakulapita, while being a young girl myself, I am not aware of having wronged him even in my thoughts, still less in my deeds. Our wish is to be in one another's sight as long as this life lasts, and in the future life as well." Then the Blessed One spoke thus, "If, householders, both wife and husband wish to be in one another's sight so long as this life lasts, and in the future life as well, they should have the same faith, the same moral discipline, the same generosity, the same wisdom. Then they will be in one another's sight so long as this life lasts, and in the future life as well, when both are faithful and generous, self-restrained, of righteous living. They come together as husband and wife, full of love for each other. Many blessings come their way. They dwell together in happiness. Their enemies are left dejected when both are equal in virtue. Having lived by Dhamma in this world, the same in virtue and observance, they rejoice after death in the Deva world, enjoying abundant happiness." Anguttara Nikaya 4:55, 2:61-62. C. Seven Kinds of Wives. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. In the morning, the Blessed One dressed, took his bowl and robe, and went to Anathapindika's house, where he sat down in a seat prepared for him. On that occasion, people in the house were making an uproar and a racket. The householder Anathapindika approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to him, "Why are people in your house making this uproar and racket, householder? One would think they were fishermen making a haul of fish." "That, venerable sir, is our daughter-in-law Sujata. She is rich and has been brought here from a rich family. She does not obey her father-in-law and mother-in-law, nor her husband. She does not even honor, respect, esteem, and venerate the Blessed One." Then the Blessed One called the daughter-in-law Sujata, saying, "Come, Sujata." "Yes, venerable sir," she replied, and she went to the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to her, "There are seven kinds of wives, Sujata." "What seven?" "One like a slayer, one like a thief, one like a tyrant, one like a mother, one like a sister, one like a friend, and one like a handmaid. These are the seven kinds of wives. Now, which of these seven are you? I do not understand in detail the meaning of the Blessed One's brief statement. It would be good, Venerable Sir, if the Blessed One would teach me the Dhamma in such a way that I might understand the meaning in detail. Then listen, Sujata, and attend carefully. I will speak. Yes, Venerable Sir, Sujata replied. The Blessed One said this. With hateful mind, cold and heartless, lusting for others, despising her husband, who seeks to kill the one who bought her, such a wife is called a slayer. When her husband acquires wealth, by his craft or trade or farm work, she tries to filch a little for herself. Such a wife is called a thief. The slothful glutton, bent on idling, harsh, fierce, rough in speech, a woman who bullies her own supporter. Such a wife is called a tyrant. One who is always helpful and kind, who guards her husband as a mother her son, who carefully protects the wealth he earns. Such a wife is called a mother. She who holds her husband in high regard, as younger sister holds the elder born, who humbly submits to her husband's will, such a wife is called a sister. One who rejoices at her husband's sight, as one friend might welcome another, well-raised, virtuous, devoted, such a wife is called a friend. One without anger, afraid of punishment, who bears with her husband free of hate, who humbly submits to her husband's will, such a wife is called a handmaiden. The types of wives here called a slayer, a thief, and the wife like a tyrant, these kinds of wives, with the body's breakup, will be reborn deep in hell. But wives like mother, sister, friend, and the wife called a handmaid, steady in virtue, long restrained, with the body's breakup, go to heaven. These, Sujata, are the seven kinds of wives. Now, which of these are you? Beginning today, Venerable Sir, you should consider me a wife who is like a handmaid. Anguttara Nikaya, 759, 491-94. Part 3. Present Welfare, Future Welfare. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Koliyans, where there was a market town of the Koliyans named Kakarapata. Then the Koliyan family man, Digha Janu, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. So seated, he said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, we are lay people who enjoy sensual pleasures, dwelling at home in a bed crowded with children, enjoying fine sandalwood, wearing garlands, scents, and unguents, accepting gold and silver. Let the Blessed One teach the Dhamma to us in a way that will lead to our welfare and happiness, both in the present life and in the future life as well. There are, Byagha Paja, four things that lead to the welfare and happiness of a family man in this very life. What for? The accomplishment of persistent effort, the accomplishment of protection, good friendship, and balanced living. And what is the accomplishment of persistent effort? Here, Byagha Paja, whatever may be the means by which a family man earns his living, whether by farming, trade, cattle raising, archery, or civil service, or by some other craft, he is skillful and diligent. He investigates the appropriate means, and is able to act and arrange everything properly. This is called the accomplishment of persistent effort. And what is the accomplishment of protection? Here, Byagha Paja, a family man sets up protection and guard over the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained, thinking, how can I prevent kings and bandits from taking this away, fire from burning it, floods from sweeping it off, and unloved heirs from taking it? This is called the accomplishment of protection. And what is good friendship? Here, Byagha Paja, In whatever village or town a family man dwells, he associates with householders or their sons, whether young or old, who are of mature virtue, accomplished in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. He converses with them and engages in discussions with them. He emulates them in regard to their accomplishment in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. This is called good friendship. Then what is balanced living? Hear, Byagha Paja. A family man knows his income and expenditures and leads a balanced life, neither extravagant nor miserly, so that his income exceeds his expenditures rather than the reverse. Just as a goldsmith or his apprentice holding up a scale knows, by so much it has dipped down, by so much it has tilted up. So a family man leads a balanced life. The wealth thus amassed has four sources of dissipation: womanizing, drunkenness, gambling, and evil friendship. Just as in the case of a tank with four inlets and outlets, if one should close the inlets and open the outlets, there would not be adequate rainfall. A decrease rather than an increase of the water could be expected in the tank. So these four things bring about the dissipation of amassed wealth. Similarly, there are four sources for the increase of amassed wealth: abstinence from womanizing, from drunkenness, from gambling, and from evil friendship. Just as in the case of a tank with four inlets and outlets, if one should open the inlets and close the outlets, and there would be adequate rainfall, an increase rather than a decrease of the water could be expected in the tank. So these four things bring about the increase of amassed wealth. These four things, Byagha Paja, lead to a family man's welfare and happiness in the present life. Four other things lead to a family man's welfare and happiness in the future life. What four? Accomplishment in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. And how is a family man accomplished in faith? Here, Byagha Paja, a family man has faith. He places faith in the enlightenment of the Tathagata. So the Blessed One is an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. In this way, a family man is accomplished in faith. And how is a family man accomplished in moral discipline? Here, Byagha Paja, a family man abstains from the destruction of life, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, and from wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the basis for negligence. In this way, a family man is accomplished in moral discipline. And how is a family man accomplished in generosity? Here, Byagha Paja, a family man dwells at home with a mind devoid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. In this way, a family man is accomplished in generosity. And how is a family man accomplished in wisdom? Here, Byagha Paja, a family man possesses the wisdom that sees into the arising and passing away of phenomena, that is noble and penetrative, and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. In this way, a family man is accomplished in wisdom. These four things, Byagha Paja, lead to a family man's welfare and happiness in the future life. Anguttara Nikaya, 854. 4. 281 through 285. Right livelihood. Verse 1. Avoiding wrong livelihood. These five trades, O monks, should not be taken up by a lay follower: trading in weapons, trading in living beings, trading in meat, trading in intoxicants, trading in poison. Anguttara Nikaya, 5.177, 3.208. Verse 2. The proper use of wealth. The Blessed One addressed the householder, Anatha Pindika. With the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth righteously gained, the noble disciple undertakes four worthy deeds. What for? With the wealth thus gained, he makes himself happy and pleased and properly maintains himself in happiness. He makes his parents happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his wife and children, his slaves, workers, and servants happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. He makes his friends and colleagues happy and pleased and properly maintains them in happiness. This is the first case of wealth gone to good use, fruitfully applied and used for a worthy cause. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple makes provisions against the losses that might arise on account of fire and floods, kings and bandits and unloved heirs. He makes himself secure against them. This is the second cause of wealth gone to good use. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple makes the five kinds of offerings to relatives, guests, ancestors, the king, and the devas. This is the third case of wealth gone to good use. Further, householder, with the wealth thus gained, the noble disciple establishes a lofty offering of alms to those ascetics and Brahmins who refrain from vanity and negligence, who are settled in patience and gentleness, who are devoted to taming themselves, to calming themselves, and to attaining nibbana. An offering that is heavenly, resulting in happiness, conducive to heaven. This is the fourth case of wealth gone to good use, fruitfully employed and used for a worthy cause. These, householder, are the four worthy deeds that the noble disciple undertakes with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow. Righteous wealth, righteously gained. For anyone whose wealth is expended on other things apart from these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to waste, to have been squandered and used frivolously. But for anyone whose wealth is expended on these four worthy deeds, that wealth is said to have gone to good use, to have been fruitfully employed and used for a worthy cause. Anguttara Nikaya 4:61, 2:65-68. Verse 3. A Family Man's Happiness. The Blessed One said to the householder, Anathapindika, "There are, householder, these four kinds of happiness, which may be achieved by a lay person who enjoys sensual pleasures, depending on time and occasion. What for? The happiness of possession, the happiness of enjoyment, the happiness of freedom from debt, and the happiness of blamelessness. And what, householder, is the happiness of possession? Here a family man possesses wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained. When he thinks, I possess wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of possession. And what, householder, is the happiness of enjoyment? Here, with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, amassed by the strength of his arms, earned by the sweat of his brow, righteous wealth, righteously gained, a family man enjoys his wealth and does meritorious deeds. When he thinks, with the wealth acquired by energetic striving, righteously gained, I enjoy my wealth and do meritorious deeds, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of enjoyment. And what, householder, is the happiness of freedom from debt? Here a family man is not indebted to anyone to any degree, whether small or great. When he thinks, I am not indebted to anyone to any degree, whether small or great, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of freedom from debt. And what, householder, is the happiness of blamelessness? Here, householder, a noble disciple is endowed with blameless conduct of body, speech, and mind. When he thinks, I am endowed with blameless conduct of body, speech, and mind, he experiences happiness and joy. This is called the happiness of blamelessness. These, householder, are the four kinds of happiness that a layperson who enjoys sensual pleasures may achieve, depending on time and occasion. Anguttara Nikaya 4:62. 2:69-70. Part 5. The Woman of the Home. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Savatthi, in the Eastern Park, in the mansion of Megara's mother. Then Visakha, Megara's mother, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to her, Visakha, when a woman possesses four qualities, she is heading for victory in the present world and is successful in this world. What for? Here, Visakha, a woman is capable at her work. She manages her domestic help. She behaves in a way that is agreeable to her husband, and she safeguards his earnings. And how is a woman capable at her work? Here, Visakha, she is skillful and diligent in regard to her husband's household chores. Whether with wool or cotton, she investigates the appropriate means and is able to act and arrange everything properly. In this way, a woman is capable at her work. And how is a woman one who manages the domestic help? Here, Visakha, in regard to her husband's domestic helpers, slaves, servants, or workers, she knows by direct inspection what they have done and failed to do. She knows when they are sick and healthy, and she distributes to each the appropriate share of food. In this way, a woman manages the domestic help. And how does a woman behave in a way that is agreeable to her husband? Here, Visakha, a woman would not commit any misdeed that her husband would consider disagreeable, even at the cost of her life. In this way, a woman behaves in a way that is agreeable to her husband. And how does a woman safeguard her husband's earnings? Here, Visakha, whatever her husband brings home, whether money or grain, silver or gold, she succeeds in protecting and guarding it, and she is not a spendthrift, thief, wastrel, or squanderer of his wealth. In this way, a woman safeguards her husband's earnings. When, Visakha, a woman possesses these four qualities, she is heading for victory in the present world and is successful in this world. But when she possesses four other qualities, she is heading for victory in the other world and is successful in regard to the other world. What for? Here, Visakha, a woman is accomplished in faith, moral discipline, generosity, and wisdom. And how is a woman accomplished in faith? Here, Visakha, a woman has faith. She places faith in the enlightenment of the Tathagata thus. So the Blessed One is an Arahant, as in text 4:3. Teacher of Devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. In this way, a woman is accomplished in faith. And how is a woman accomplished in moral discipline? Here, Visakha, a woman who abstains from the destruction of life, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, and from wines, liquors, and intoxicants, the basis for negligence. In this way, a woman is accomplished in moral discipline. And how is a woman accomplished in generosity? Here, Visakha, a woman dwells at home with a mind devoid of the stain of stinginess, freely generous, open-handed, delighting in relinquishment, one devoted to charity, delighting in giving and sharing. In this way, a woman is accomplished in generosity. And how is a woman accomplished in wisdom? Here, Visakha, a woman possesses the wisdom that sees into the arising and passing away of phenomena, that is noble and penetrative, and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. When a woman possesses these four qualities, she is heading for victory in the other world, and is successful in regard to the other world. Anguttara Nikaya, 849, 4, 269 through 271. Part 6. The Community. Verse 1. Six Roots of Dispute. 6. There are, Ananda, these six roots of disputes. What six? Here, Ananda, a monk is angry and resentful. Such a monk dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and he does not fulfill the training. A monk who dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and who does not fulfill the training, creates a dispute in the Sangha, which would be for the harm and unhappiness of many, for the loss, harm, and suffering of devas and humans. Now, if you see any such root of dispute, either in yourselves or externally, you should strive to abandon that same evil root of dispute. And if you do not see any such root of dispute, either in yourselves or externally, you should practice in such a way that that same evil root of dispute does not erupt in the future. Thus, there is the abandoning of that evil root of dispute. Thus, there is the non-eruption of that evil root of dispute in the future. 7-11. Again, a monk is contemptuous and insolent, envious and niggardly, deceitful and fraudulent, has evil wishes and wrong view, adheres to his own views, holds on to them tenaciously, and relinquishes them with difficulty. Such a monk dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma and the Sangha, and he does not fulfill the training. A monk who dwells without respect and deference toward the teacher, the Dhamma and the Sangha, and who does not fulfill the training, creates a dispute in the Sangha, which would be for the harm and unhappiness of many, for the loss, harm, and suffering of devas and humans. Now, if you see any such root of dispute either in yourselves or externally, you should strive to abandon that same evil root of dispute. And if you do not see any such root of dispute either in yourselves or externally, you should practice in such a way that that same evil root of dispute does not erupt in the future. Thus, there is the abandoning of that evil root of dispute. Thus, there is the non-eruption of that evil root of dispute in the future. These are the six roots of dispute. From Majjhima Nikaya 104, Samagama Sutta 2, 245 through 247. Verse 2. Six Principles of Cordiality. 21. Ananda, there are six principles of cordiality that create love and respect, and conduce to cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. What are the six? Here a monk maintains bodily acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect, and conduces to cohesion, non-dispute, concord, and unity. Again, a monk maintains verbal acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk maintains mental acts of loving kindness both in public and in private toward his companions in the holy life. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk enjoys things in common with his virtuous companions in the holy life. Without making reservations, he shares with them any righteous gain that has been obtained in a righteous way, including even the mere content of his alms bowl. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life those virtues that are unbroken, untorn, unblemished, unmodeled, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect and conduces to unity. Again, a monk dwells both in public and in private, possessing in common with his companions in the holy life that view that is noble and emancipating, and leads the one who practices in accordance with it to the complete destruction of suffering. This too is a principle of cordiality that creates love and respect, and conduces to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. These are the six principles of cordiality that create love and respect, and conduce to cohesion, to non-dispute, to concord, and to unity. From Majjhima Nikaya 104, Samagama Sutta 2, 250 through 251. Verse 3. Purification is for all four castes. 1. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jeta's Grove, Anathapindika's park. 2. Now at that time, 500 Brahmins from diverse provinces were staying at Savatthi for some business or other. Then those Brahmins thought, this ascetic Gotama describes purification for all the four castes. Who is there able to dispute with him about this assertion? 3. Now, on that occasion, a Brahmin student named Asalayana was staying at Savatthi. Young, shaven-headed, 16 years old, he was a master of the three Vedas with their vocabularies, liturgy, phonology, and etymology, and the histories as a fifth. Skilled in philology and grammar, he was fully versed in natural philosophy and in the marks of a great man. So the Brahmins thought he would be able to debate with the Blessed One. 4. They went to the Brahmin student Asalayana and said to him, Master Asalayana, this ascetic Gotama describes purification for all the four castes. Let Master Asalayana come and dispute with the ascetic Gotama about this assertion. When this was said, the Brahmin student Asalayana replied, Sirs, the ascetic Gotama is one who speaks the Dhamma. Now those who speak the Dhamma are difficult to dispute with. I cannot dispute with the ascetic Gotama about this assertion. A second time and a third time the Brahmins urged him to go. A second time the Brahmin student Asalayana refused, but after the third urging he consented. 5. The Brahmin student Asalayana went with a large number of Brahmins to the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and said to the Blessed One, Master Gotama, the Brahmins say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste. Those of any other caste are inferior. Brahmins are the fairest caste. Those of any other caste are dark. Only Brahmins are purified, not non-Brahmins. Brahmins alone are the sons of Brahma, the offspring of Brahma, born of his mouth, born of Brahma, created by Brahma, heirs of Brahma. What does Master Gotama say about that? Now, Asalayana, the Brahmin women are seen having their periods, becoming pregnant, giving birth, and nursing. And yet those Brahmins, though born from the womb, say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste. Brahmins alone are the sons of Brahma, the offspring of Brahma, born of his mouth, born of Brahma, created by Brahma, heirs of Brahma. 6. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Have you heard that in Yona and Cambodia, and in other outland countries there are only two castes, masters and slaves, and that masters become slaves, and slaves become masters? So I have heard, sir. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 7. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Kshatriya were to kill living beings, take what is not given, commit sexual misconduct, speak falsely, speak maliciously, speak harshly, gossip, be covetous, have a mind of ill will, and hold wrong view. With the breakup of the body, after death, would only he be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, and not a Brahmin? Suppose a merchant, a worker, were to kill living beings and hold wrong view. With the breakup of the body after death, would only he be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell, and not a Brahmin? No, Master Gotama, whether it be a Kshatriya or a Brahmin, or a merchant or a worker, those of all four castes who kill living beings and hold wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death would be reborn in a state of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. Then, on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 8. Although Master Gotama says this, Still the Brahmins think thus. Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Brahmin were to abstain from killing living beings, from taking what is not given, from sexual misconduct, from false speech, from malicious speech, from harsh speech, and from gossip, and were to be without covetousness, to have a mind without ill will, and to hold right view. With the breakup of the body after death, would only he be reborn in a good destination, in the heavenly world, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama. Whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes who abstain from killing living beings and hold right view, with the breakup of the body after death, will be reborn in a good destination, in the heavenly world. Then, on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 9. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Is only a Brahmin capable of developing a mind of loving kindness toward this region, without hostility and without ill will, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama. Whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes are capable of developing a mind of loving kindness toward this region, without hostility and without ill will. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 10. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Is only a Brahmin capable of taking a bathing brush and bath powder, going to the river, and washing off dust and dirt, and not a Khatiya, or a merchant, or a worker? No, Master Gotama. Whether a Khatiya, a Brahmin, a merchant, or a worker, those of all four castes are capable of taking a bathing brush and bath powder, going to the river, and washing off dust and dirt. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 11. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a consecrated Khatiya king were to assemble here 100 men of different birth, and say to them, Come, sirs, let any here who have been born into a Khatiya clan or a Brahmin clan or a royal clan take an upper fire stick of fine quality wood and light a fire and produce heat. And also let any who have been born into an outcast clan, a trapper clan, a wicker worker's clan, a cartwright's clan, or a scavenger's clan, take an upper fire stick made from a dog's drinking trough, from a pig's trough, from a dustbin, or from castor oil wood, and light a fire and produce heat. What do you think, Asalayana? When a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone in the first group, would that fire have a flame, a color and radiance? And would it be possible to use it for the purposes of fire? While when a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the second group, that fire would have no flame, no color, and no radiance, and it would not be possible to use it for the purposes of fire? No, Master Gotama. When a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the first group, that fire would have a flame, a color, and radiance, and it would be possible to use it for the purposes of fire. And when a fire is lit and heat is produced by someone of the second group, that fire too would have a flame, a color, and radiance, and it would be possible to use it for the purposes of fire. For all fire has a flame, a color, and a radiance, and it is possible to use all fire for the purposes of fire. Then on the strength of what argument, or with the support of what authority, do the Brahmins in this case say thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. 12. Although Master Gotama says this, still the Brahmins think thus, Brahmins are the highest caste, heirs of Brahma. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Khatiya youth were to unite with a Brahmin girl, and a son was born from their union. Should a son born from a Kshatriya youth and a Brahmin girl be called a Kshatriya after the father, or a Brahmin after the mother? He could be called both, Master Gotama. 13. What do you think, Asalayana? Suppose a Brahmin youth here were to unite with a Kshatriya girl, and a son were to